Hello, I'm Veronica, Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. Professor Dermot Quinn is an historian and a Chesterton scholar who's currently Associate Director of the Chesterton Institute for Faith and Culture, situated in Seton Hall University in New Jersey in the United States. In an interview with me, Professor Quinn places Chesterton into an historical context while highlighting his relevance in today's society. Professor Quinn also points to the importance recent popes have attributed to Chesterton, popes such as Benedict XVI, now Pope Emeritus, and Pope John Paul I. Finally, Professor Quinn sheds light on Chesterton's conversion to the Catholic faith, as well as the lighter side to his personality. Stay tuned. Chesterton lived at a very exciting time in history.
He lived at a fascinating time. You know, he was born in 1874, he died in 1936, so he spanned the late Victorian, Edwardian and Georgian periods. He was someone who was absolutely at the centre of the journalistic debates of his time, the political debates of his time, the economic debates of his time. Chesterton is someone who is, I think, very much at the centre of the kind of debates that we are having in our time. So Chesterton was very much a person of his time in the late Victorian years, and I think he's a person of our time today.
The recent popes, or at least some of them, have certainly not forgotten him, have they?
Well, I am familiar with that. And of course, not only did Pope Benedict speak of Chesterton, but John Paul I, Papa Luciano, wrote very beautifully.
Imaginary letter
to Chesterton.
My dear Chesterton, you know as well as I, God is not like that, but is at once good and just. Father also to prodigal sons, not wanting us poor and wretched, but great, free, creators of our own destiny. Our God is so far from being man's rival that he wanted man to share in his own divine nature and in his own eternal happiness. And it's not true that he makes excessive demands of us. On the contrary, he is satisfied with little, because he knows very well that we do not have much. Dear Chesterton, I am convinced, as you are, this God will become more and more known and loved by everyone, including those who reject him today, not because they're wicked, they may be better than either of us, but because they look at him from a mistaken point of view. Do they continue not to believe in him? Then he answers, I believe in you.
Chesterton is a man of great lightness of touch. I mean, I think Papa Luciano was, of course, a very brief pope, but a beautifully cheerful pope, the smiling pope as we remember him. And I think that is something that he shares with Chesterton. Chesterton is someone who is able to speak very profoundly about complex and difficult things, but to do so in a way which is accessible, which is light, which is comical, which is funny, which is engaging. And I think that is why Chesterton is so much a prophet, I think, for today. So many things that Chesterton can say to our world, and to say those things in an attractive and humorous and comical way.
But Chesterton is difficult to approach, I think, because he was such a prolific writer. Maybe there are other reasons as well, though you say that he is accessible to people.
I think he is accessible. He was greatly beloved in his own time. I mean, he was an enormously popular journalist. People read his column every week in the Daily News or in the Illustrated London News or whatever. So he wrote specifically for the general public. So it seems to me he's someone who is quite easy to access, to be in touch with. But you're quite right that some of the ideas that he's exploring are really quite difficult to get our heads around. I mean, he was a great popularizer of St. Thomas. He regarded St. Thomas as one of the greatest of all saints because of his intellectual work. Thomas is a difficult man to understand if you read him, you know, as a philosopher. On the other hand, someone like Chesterton could take the ideas of St. Thomas and render them in a form which was really quite available to many, many people. He wrote a small biography of St. Thomas, and the great Thomist philosopher Etienne Gilson said that...
The Frenchman.
The Frenchman, that's right, said that this was the greatest book on St. Thomas ever written.
Which is amazing.
It is amazing, and Chestertonians like to quote that. I mean, Gilson might have been slightly exaggerating, of course, but he considered that to be one of the greatest works ever written about St. Thomas. And Chesterton, if you like, understood St. Thomas from the inside. He had somehow understood the very depths of St. Thomas's intellectual life and is able to convey that to a popular audience. And I think that's just tremendously impressive.
Of course, they shared a great body, didn't they, both of them?
Well, that is certainly true.
And joy, and that joyful.
Well, that's quite right. Chesterton said at the end of his great work, Orthodoxy, that joy is the gigantic secret of the Christian. And certainly, Chesterton was a big man, and St. Thomas was a big man, and I always like to think that fat men are particularly devoted to the doctrine of the Incarnation.
Of course, Chesterton, sometimes we forget that he was a convert, no?
He was a convert, and...
A convert to Catholicism from...
From Anglicanism. Chesterton's intellectual or his spiritual journey is a slightly complicated one. His family didn't seem to have very much religion. He was kind of from a Unitarian background, then went through a phase of non-belief where he had a kind of mental breakdown in many ways. Someone like St. Thomas and the ideas of Thomas, which brought him round to recognizing once again the goodness of the world, the reality of God in material things, that kind of sacramental way of understanding reality. So he became an Anglican and was converted to Church of Rome, to the Roman Catholic faith in 1922. But in many ways he was Catholic in his intellectual and spiritual life long before he was actually received into the Church.
And he inspired other people to convert.
He was very much the inspirer of many, many people to rediscover the joy of Christianity.
You said earlier that Chesterton didn't believe, but then he wrote Orthodoxy, which is in contrast with darkness, in a sense, isn't it?
That's right. And Orthodoxy is his recognition that he had been walking in a dark place, personally and intellectually and spiritually, and he was seeking a philosophy. He was trying to find some philosophy, trying, if you like, to invent some philosophy. And it suddenly dawned on him that this philosophy was there all along, and it was Christian Orthodoxy. Christian Orthodoxy explained the world in a way that nothing else could explain the world, and it was, as he said, like a key fitting into a lock. Everything clicked, everything made sense. Every doctrine, every dogma seemed to speak to some particular experience that he had. The reality of the world, the reality of evil, the redemption of Christ, all of these things which he had been struggling about in his own dark place suddenly became clear when he looked at Christian Orthodoxy. And as he said in the very first page of that famous book, Orthodoxy, it's not my philosophy. God and humanity made it, and it made me. Very, very beautiful words, I think.
So he's an author who has so many facets, it's unbelievable. He also believed in the power of imagination and wonder related to faith, no?
I think wonder is a key idea in Chesterton. He said, again in Orthodoxy, that the great challenge to the philosopher is to be at once at home in the world and utterly astonished by it. To be at home in the world and to be astonished by it. Chesterton never lost that sense of astonishment, of wonder, and of gratitude for the reality of existence itself. So all of his life, he is expressing a kind of hymn of praise for his own existence and for existence itself. It's a kind of childlike wonder. Chesterton was in some respects, a child, a very big child as he grew older. He loved children. He loved childish things. He had a toy theatre. It was a sort of beautiful childhood spirituality. Chesterton had that sense of wonder and gratitude. And again, to get back to your point, that is really a facet of his imagination. I mean, that he can imagine, even as a man, the world as seen by a child. It's a wonderful gift, and very often I think we lose it.
You describe him then as a timeless author.
I think he is. I think he speaks to our time. I think he spoke certainly to his own time. He speaks in very practical ways about things like the economy, things like the need for a humane social order, the importance of the family, the importance of community. His economic vision is sometimes called distributism, which is very much in keeping with the ideas of, for example, Pope Leo XIII in Rerum Novarum.
Stemmed from the Industrial Revolution, in a sense.
Very much so. In a world where you had kind of crushing poverty and the industrial working classes without really much in the way of hope or dignity, Chesterton and Pope Leo XIII argued about the importance of private ownership, of people having their own property, their own independence. Chesterton, I think, developed this idea, was consciously in the debt of Pope Leo XIII, and those are ideas which Pope John Paul II, of course, developed very much in his own magnificent social encyclicals, Centesimus Annus, and so on.
So, what do you like personally most about Chesterton?
I like his humour, I like his humanity, I like his gratitude, I like his paradoxes. He is, for me, as for many people, a kind of friend that I never met. He is an enormously genial, affectionate, funny man who has seen very deep things and has understood those very deep things and has conveyed those deep things in a light and beautiful way.
In June of 1936, Ronald Knox said at Chesterton's funeral, I think it was in Westminster Cathedral, "All of this generation has grown up under Chesterton's influence so completely that we do not even know when we are thinking Chesterton." Do you think this corresponded to the truth at the time?
I think in some respects it did. Obviously, a man preaching a funeral sermon is perhaps engaged in a slight bit of exaggeration. But Chesterton was a profoundly influential figure in his day. He was, as I've said, a journalist whose journalism was read with great avidity, great interest. Chesterton spoke to many, many people, some of whom were not Catholic, many were not Catholic, but he conveyed to them something of the Catholic imagination, something of the Catholic vision. So I think that Monsignor Knox was quite accurate in the way in which he depicted Chesterton's influence in his day. He was simply an enormous figure, as you say, physically, but also intellectually. He had a huge impact on the England of his day.
Of course, he described himself as a rollicking journalist. How does that come together with the Christian ideal that he actually wrote about?
Oh, well, he certainly wouldn't have thought that there was any incompatibility between enjoying a pint of beer and being a Christian. God speaks to us materially, and Chesterton believed in pleasure. He believed in joy. He believed in companionship. He believed in friendship. And all of those things are God's gift to us. Chesterton, if you like, exemplified, or so to speak, incarnated his own gospel of pleasure and friendship.
And you were listening there to Professor Dermot Quinn, historian and Chesterton scholar, who's currently Associate Director of the Chesterton Institute for Faith and Culture, situated in Seton Hall University, New Jersey, United States. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.